Hello, this is Denise Yon, and welcome to the Brand is Business Bites podcast. The Brand is Business Bites podcast gives you a taste of insights and information about brands, businesses, and the people who work on them. It's available on iTunes. For more stuff for your brain to chew on, please visit my website at deniseleeyon.com.
Welcome to the podcast. It is my pleasure to introduce Jean Bliss. Jean has been the customer leadership executive for five large U.S. market leaders, including Coldwell Banker, Microsoft, and Mazda. Jean developed her passion for the customer at Land's End, where she reported to the company's founder and served as the leader for the brand's customer experience. She's also the author of two great groundbreaking books, Chief Customer Officer and I Love You More Than My Dog, which I just love the title of, and we'll talk a little more about that. But Jean, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Oh, Denise, it's so great to be here. Thank you.
Great. Well, I want to jump right into it and talk about your perspectives on brand building. And you know, one of the things that comes through loud and clear, even again from the title of your book, is the importance of being a beloved company. And I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about why is emotion and this love so important in brand building?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I did 2 years of research trying to figure out, I kind of backwards engineered from the emotion to understand what operationally these companies do, but then had to dig a little deeper and understand that it's the decisions they make and the direction that they deliberately decide to move their decisions in one direction or another that earn this emotional connection. And it is an emotional connection that breaks down the barrier of corporation and company to like-minded people doing work together. And so what happens is these companies appear as humans with their humanity showing through and emit such comments from their customers as I love you more than my dog, or Zappos marry me, end the madness, the inside flat pages of the book. In fact, they went all over Yelp and opinions, and there's probably 10 to 15 marriage proposals on there.
Wow.
And you know, you need to earn, what do you do to earn this kind of devotion and love? Well, it's these decisions, but it's earning the right to the emotion and understanding how to steer the business to get to that.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's a very deliberate, intentional thing. It's not as if you just kind of stumble upon this or it just happens to happen.
That is true. And you know, that's why I wanted to kind of continue to peel back the layers. You know, all of us chase the end state. Oh, this company did that. Well, if you don't have the intent and the motivation, what goes on, the gears inside the clock, you can't ever get to that action. Or maybe you can one time, but you can't create a repeatable set of actions on an ongoing basis that translates across your organization that continues to earn that kind of love and respect.
Right, right. Well, let me ask you, you know, it sounds a little crazy that, you know, the marriage proposal, et cetera, but I think that, you know, as customers, you know, companies that do kind of foster that emotion really do resonate with us. And I'm curious, you know, in your book you state that for both customers and employees,
That's right.
You know, we crave what beloved companies deliver. Can you talk about why that is?
Well, you know, it goes back. I started the journey talking about the golden rule, which is a little, you know, it sounds a little simplistic, but the fact of the matter is that we want to be able to make the same congruent, we want to have congruence between the kinds of decisions we know we're able to make in our personal lives that we can make in our business lives. And it's the companies that have congruence of heart and habit that enable people to bring the best version of themselves to work every day, that create the energy, the spirit, and the unbridled innovation and enthusiasm that then connects back to customers. And, you know, we all want to have that congruence in the decisions that we make. But yet, what happens in corporate America, we've all been penned into making decisions that don't quite feel right to us. Or, you know, in business policies and procedures and at the frontline level. And when companies create this congruence, that becomes a magnet for employees and therefore then translates over to customers.
Right, right. Well, okay, so can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, you know, why or, yeah, how do the relationships that employees have with the company impact the relationships that customers have? Like, what?
Sure.
You know, how does that work?
Well, let's use an example. The first decision in the book is decide to believe. And that was purposely the first decision because it's trust and transparency and honesty and open relationship, kind of showing all the wounds and allowing people to be honest and genuine with one another. So, for example, Griffin Hospital is a hospital in Connecticut. It's a small regional hospital, which was considered by the people in their market area to be the one hospital that you needed to avoid. If your kid broke his arm, you'd drive an extra 10 miles to not go to Griffin Hospital. And they knew that they needed to start doing things to get rid of that mojo and that loss of revenue and that, you know, they weren't thriving, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things they started getting into was, let's start chopping down these legacy decisions around, for example, one of the major milestone things they did was get rid of the barrier, the big black box, where the doctors and the healthcare workers can see a patient's chart, but the family members and the patient themselves cannot. And because they created that rule, right? Now healthcare workers had to do and say and be measured in what they told the patient, and it kind of got in the way of what we normally want to do as people is tell everything, be honest and open. The minute they threw open those doors and said, we are going to be transparent and the patients and families can see their records on paper and electronically and even make notes, it created this bond and this trust. Now, when they started doing it, guess who was most fearful? The lawyers.
I was just going to ask you about that. Yes.
And the doctors themselves, who, you know, live in a litigious society, unfortunately. But what was interesting was, as soon as they made that decision, they saw their malpractice suits drop by more than half.
Wow.
And so
almost the opposite reaction of what the lawyers probably thought was going to happen, right?
Right, right. So an arm over a shoulder and a cup of coffee trumps the legal system every time because what we crave, and this goes back to, we want the congruence of what our moms and dads taught us to do to be how we're able to translate that into the actions we make in business. And so by getting rid of that rule, it enabled the front line and the healthcare workers to do what they knew was right, which then translated to great results with customers.
Right. So it sounds like customers and people in general are a lot more forgiving than we might give them credit for then.
That's exactly right. And the last chapter of the book is called Decide to Say Sorry. And this is about being deliberate and understanding that there's a rift in the emotional connection between a company and a customer when you make a mistake. Now, customers, you know, we're people. We all make mistakes in our personal lives and certainly in our business lives, and we know that companies are going to make mistakes. What is more annoying to a customer than that the mistake was made was, A, when a company tries to sweep it under the rug and not admit a mistake was made. You know, we've all observed the Toyota thing, for example.
Yes.
It's been very interesting to see that journey. But, B, that there's nothing proactive and done in terms of an olive branch, solving the customer's problem, and making a commitment that it will go away. You know, Netflix, a very beloved company, over 10 million subscribers. One of the reasons that they thrive is that, for example, a few years ago, they had a glitch in their technology system, and they stopped sending DVDs as fast as they would. Well, you know, probably fewer than 10% of their subscribers knew that that glitch was kind of holding up, because if you're like any, if they're like me, you know, we always have a backlog of the DVDs we haven't watched anyway.
Right.
But before anybody let them know, before subscribers started complaining, they sent an email blast to their whole subscriber base admitting something went wrong and letting customers know that there's been a little glitch and things are going to arrive slower. And if you were a new subscriber in your trial period, they extended that. Now, what that talks about more than anything else is the character of the people in the company making those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And you are magnetically drawn to buy from people who are providing a good product and service but have character to make the right decision, to treat you in a human, direct, and honest fashion.
Right, right. Now, I guess one of the challenges that I think some people might face is that they are, you know, filling a role in an organization where they're not necessarily driving the culture or the decision making.
Right.
And, you know, the examples you use so far have, I think, are examples of great leadership who have just made it, you know, intentional decision to move in this direction. Do you have any advice for, you know, folks who are, you know, not in that role and how they might be able to influence what's going on in their companies?
Absolutely. So, and I'm so glad you asked that question because especially at the front line, for example, or even in the middle of an organization, what we need to remember is that in our face-to-face interactions with customers or fellow employees, we get to decide on how the moment of contact with the person we're interacting with is going to work its way out. So if we think about that our job is to be a memory creator, even, for example, if you are a claim rep in a large insurance company and you have to turn down someone's claim, you can make a decision to do it with dignity, to do it with empathy, and to explain to the customer what happened that they could do differently to prevent this from occurring again. The memory you create when that customer hangs up their phone is, yes, this was turned down, but I know what to do next, and this is a company that's going to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, go ahead.
No, so it's a matter of taking responsibility for what you can control.
Right, and deciding that you know, again, at every interaction, we can be memory creators. And that's one thing that really resonates. Even, you know, this whole idea of the silos in all of our large corporations, for example, we know that there's things that we want to change that we can't impact because of the legacy of everything else that's come before us. And we're in the middle of an organization. But yet we can impact a part of the interactions that we have with other folks that we interact with from a silo standpoint, for example. So we can be deliberate and choose. And so this is about the fact that we're not victims. We have choices, and we can make a decision to move our actions in one direction or another.
That's great. I mean, I think that that's really important for people to understand that there are things that we can be doing in our daily decision-making that make a difference if we decide to do them.
That's right. In fact, before my publisher came up with the title, I Love You More Than My Dog, I simply wanted to call the book Decide.
Decide, yeah.
Because we're making choices every day, and we don't think of them as choices. But that's our power, is we get to make a choice. We get to decide.
Right. Which is, I think, you know, it's a lot of responsibility, but it's also very liberating in a way, you know?
Completely liberating if we look at the fact that we have power in the decisions we make.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I want to wrap up with a question about, kind of shifting gears a little bit, and talk about this thing called customer loyalty. You know, I think a lot of people have been debating whether customer loyalty is still a relevant concept or a relevant goal for companies to aspire to, or whether it's a thing of the past. And I think those who would argue against it would say, you know, today with consumers being so savvy and discriminating, customer relationships are only as good as the last interaction that they've had with you. And so, you know, thinking about customer loyalty is not as important as thinking about every single interaction you have. I guess I'm just curious as to what your point of view is on this topic.
Oh gosh, well I don't think that we are transactionally driven as human beings. I think it gets back to understanding how we process the relationships in our life. For example, if you had a fight with your brother or sister, that last fight wouldn't define how you felt about your brother or sister. It would be around the long relationship of many interactions, many touch points, if you will, to put it into customer experience parlance, that you've had with that sibling. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we need to be loyal to our employees and to respect and honor customers. And by doing that, we will earn the right to their loyalty. The thing that I differ from is I don't think you can go get loyalty. I think you need to earn it. And I think that's what's getting lost in all of this, is that the long-term loyalty of customers, for example, when companies make mistakes, they are forgiven faster if there's a track record that's been leading up to that mistake of already showing and making good, deliberate decisions, honoring customers, honoring their employees, being there. When the mistake happens, it's what came before it that allows the company to get over it faster.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe loyalty is dead. I do believe people forget that they have to earn the right to it, though.
Right. And I think that that's a very important reminder. And so that's a great way for us to wrap up this talk. Jean, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I wanted to mention for my listeners that you can both learn more about Jean and her work as well as contact her through her website, which is www.customerbliss.com. So it's Customer Bliss, as in Jean Bliss. .com. And the site not only has all types of free tools that you can use, but specifically I wanted to point out that there's an electronic audit that you can do on your customer culture and assess how you make the five decisions of beloved and prosperous companies. So I'd encourage everyone who's listening to check that out and to learn more about Jean. And Jean, thank you again. This has been great. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Denise. What a great way to start the day.
Great. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so your brain will always be filled with good stuff to chew on. For more information or to contact me directly, please visit my website at deniseleeyan.com. Take care and thanks again.